Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
It's great to be here.
So to start off today, I want you to imagine a patient sitting in an ophthalmologist's exam chair.
Right, just the regular eye exam.
Exactly. And they've come in because of a missing piece of tissue in their eye. It's a potentially blinding condition called a coloboma.
Right, which is quite serious.
Yeah, it often presents as this like keyhole-shaped gap in the iris, or sometimes a missing structural component deep within the retina. But here is where it gets strange. As the medical team looks closer at this patient's history, they realize this person is harboring a couple of, well, seemingly unrelated anomalies.
Unrelated how?
This exact same patient is also missing a vertebra in their spine, and they are entirely missing one of their kidneys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, clinical medicine has historically treated a presentation like that as just, you know, a tragic sequence of isolated coincidences.
Just bad luck, essentially, yeah. An ocular defect, a spinal anomaly, and unilateral renal agenesis. That would typically send a patient to three completely different specialists.
Right.
Specialists who, frankly, might never cross-reference their notes.
Okay, let's unpack this. Wait, actually, let me rephrase that. Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you think about human embryogenesis, like constructing a massive commercial high-rise, this isn't the equivalent of a storm rolling in and, I don't know, coincidentally shattering a window, snapping a steel support beam, and bursting a plumbing pipe.
Oh, definitely not a random storm.
Right, this is like finding a single microscopic flaw in the master blueprint that simultaneously instructs the builders to skip that specific window, completely ignore the structural beam on the fifth floor, and just forget to lay the plumbing for a specific bathroom.
That's a great way to put it.
So what really happens when a master regulatory gene misfires during the earliest days of human development? Well, that is the core of the mystery we are analyzing today for this deep dive.
Yeah.
We are looking at how a singular molecular misprint can just ripple outward during embryogenesis.
Disrupting everything at once.
Exactly. Disrupting the formation of the eye, the spine, and the kidneys simultaneously.
Today we celebrate the work of the National Eye Institute, University College London, and the Genomics England team, who have advanced our understanding of complex developmental genetics by combining deep clinical observation with massive genomic databases.
It really is a profound example of collaborative molecular detective work.
It really is.
And, you know, to appreciate the scale of this research, we have to look at the specific clinical problem acting as the focal point here, which is uveal coloboma.
Right, the eye defect.
Yeah. So during early gestation, the eye develops from an optic vesicle that invaginates, basically folds in on itself, to form a cup-like structure.
Okay.
There is a seam at the bottom of this cup called the optic fissure, and it must fuse completely to form a healthy, pressurized eye.
And if it doesn't fuse?
When that fusion fails, a gap remains. That's the coloboma. And it accounts for up to 10% of childhood blindness globally.
10%?
Yeah.
Wow. And for you listening, if you follow the genomic space, you are likely familiar with how challenging congenital blindness can be to map.
Oh, absolutely.
Because despite knowing uveal coloboma has a strong genetic component, a vast majority of these patients never receive a definitive molecular diagnosis.
Right. The underlying genetic culprits have just remained elusive for a long time.
Until now.
Well, yeah. Researchers at the National Eye Institute have been tracking a specific cohort of families exhibiting this exact constellation of symptoms.
The uveal coloboma, missing thoracic or lumbar vertebrae, and the congenital kidney anomalies.
You got it. And they observed an autosomal dominant inheritance pattern, meaning it passes directly from parent to child.
But the severity varies, right?
Yes. And what's fascinating here is the incomplete penetrance across these families.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the research team identified a mother in one of the families who was visually completely asymptomatic.
Wait, really? She had no vision issues at all?
None. She had no idea she possessed a mild form of the eye defect, or that she was actually missing a thoracic vertebra entirely.
Missing a whole bone in her spine.
Yeah. Not until she underwent thorough clinical screening as part of this study.
That is wild. I mean, the adaptability of the human body in masking those structural deficits is just remarkable.
It truly is.
Missing a bone in the spinal column without any overt phenotypic signs, it really highlights how complex incomplete penetrance can be when you're tracking these conditions.
Definitely. And to solve a diagnostic puzzle where symptoms are hidden like that, and the phenotypic targets span completely different biological systems, looking at a single candidate gene based on a single symptom is just insufficient.
Right. You can't just look at one gene. You have to look at the whole instruction manual.
Precisely. A broader, completely unbiased approach is necessary. So the researchers utilize a genome-first methodology.
Okay, break that down for us.
Rather than just sequencing the affected families sitting in their clinic, they took their suspect variants and queried the UK 100,000 Genomes Project database.
The UK 100KGP.
Exactly. This allowed them to essentially reverse engineer the diagnostic process.
Oh, so.
They searched a massive population database for the specific genetic signatures first. Then they analyzed the clinical phenotypes of the individuals carrying those signatures.
Regardless of why those individuals were originally sequenced in the first place.
Exactly.
See, the power of a genome first deep dive into a database of that magnitude is that it removes the initial ascertainment bias.
Right, completely removes it.
You aren't just looking at the people who walked into an eye clinic. You are looking at the entire population.
Yes, and once they identified the suspect variants, the team leveraged AlphaFold.
The AI tool, right?
Yeah, to build three-dimensional models of the mutant proteins, mapping out the exact structural failures in silico.
So they modeled it on a computer first?
Correct. Then they transitioned from in silico modeling to in vitro cellular biology to observe these structural failures in actual action.
Testing it in human cells.
Yeah, HEK293 cells. They introduced the suspect proteins into these cells utilizing fluorescent tags.
Ah, so they could literally see where the proteins were going under a microscope.
Exactly, tracking their intracellular localization under fluorescence microscopy. But they didn't stop there.
They went to an animal model.
Yes. To bring the investigation full circle, they moved into an in vivo model. They utilized morpholinos to knock down or disable the equivalent suspect genes in zebrafish embryos.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on the direct translational value of that specific step.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, a zebrafish doesn't possess a human spine or human kidneys. Modeling complex human renal and vertebral anomalies in a tiny fish seems like an extraordinary biological leap, doesn't it?
It sounds like a leap, sure. But the conservation of these early developmental pathways across vertebrate species makes a zebrafish an ideal model.
Because of evolution.
Right. The fundamental genetic software dictating the segmentation of the body axis or the invagination of the optic cup is shared among humans, mice, and zebrafish due to common evolutionary ancestry.
Okay.
And the specific gene family involved operates on early developmental timescales that are perfectly mirrored in a zebrafish embryo.
They develop really fast, right?
Super fast. Highly visible somites appear within the first 24 hours of fertilization.
Okay, so we are essentially observing the same biological hammer and nails being used to build the foundational framework.
Yes, exactly.
Even if the final architecture looks vastly different between the two species.
That's spot on. Manipulating that shared foundation in the fish revealed the direct phenotypic consequences of a specific genetic disruption almost immediately.
Okay, so what was the culprit? What did they find?
The team identified six rare variants in a gene called NR6A1.
NR6A1?
Yes. It encodes an orphan nuclear receptor.
Yeah.
And prior to this, NR6A1 was primarily known for its role in animal embryonic development, specifically in axial elongation.
Animal spines.
Yeah, in fact, it is a gene that has historically been selected for in agricultural breeding programs to produce livestock, like pigs, with longer vertebral columns.
Wait, pigs? Are you serious?
I am. And this study is the first time NR6A1 has been definitively linked to human eye and kidney organogenesis.
Identifying an agricultural livestock gene as the primary architect behind human childhood blindness and renal failure is... Well, it's a profound shift in how we understand its biological role.
It really is. And the AlphaFold models provided the mechanical explanation for this failure.
Okay, let's hear the mechanics.
They analyzed a specific mutation labeled R92W. In the healthy wild-type protein, position 92 contains an amino acid with a positive charge.
Which it needs for something specific.
Yes, it is necessary to electrostatically bind to negatively charged DNA sequences.
But the mutation changes that.
Right. The R92W mutation substitutes that positively charged amino acid with tryptophan.
And tryptophan is different.
Very. As a bulky hydrophobic amino acid, tryptophan fundamentally disrupts the binding interface. The electrostatic interaction is completely lost.
Ah, So it replaces a positively charged amino acid with the hydrophobic one. So the protein can no longer anchor itself to the DNA.
Exactly.
So rather than just a loss of magnetic attraction, it is like trying to force a square peg into a round biochemical lock.
That's a good visual.
The physical geometry changes, preventing the molecular machinery from gripping the DNA sequence it is supposed to regulate.
You've got it.
So we know the R92W mutation destroys the DNA binding domain. Did the intracellular tracking experiments with the fluorescent tags reveal a similar mechanical breakdown for the other variants?
Actually, no. The in vitro tracking revealed a completely distinct mechanism of failure for a different variant, called R436C.
Okay, how did that one fail?
Well, a functional NR6A1 protein is synthesized in the cytoplasm, and then it must translocate, or travel, into the cell's nucleus to act as a transcription factor.
To regulate the expression of target genes.
Right. But the fluorescence microscopy demonstrated that the R436C mutant protein was trapped entirely within the cytoplasm.
Oh, wow. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because if the nucleus is the command tent where critical strategic decisions are made, this mutated transcription factor is a general who has been permanently locked out of the tent.
Exactly right.
The protein might be structurally capable of issuing commands, but without access to the nuclear environment where the DNA resides, those regulatory commands never reach their target genes. The entire developmental strategy just collapses.
That is exactly what happens. The biological function is negated, not through a structural inability to bind DNA like the first variant,
but through a failure in geographic localization.
Yes, and this leads directly to the zebrafish in vivo validation, which proved the causality of these specific failures.
So what happened when they knocked out the fish versions of the gene?
Well, the zebrafish orthologs of the gene are called NR6A1A and NR6A1B. And when they use morpholinos to knock them down, the resulting phenotypes directly mirror the human clinical presentation.
In what way?
They produced embryos with microphthalmia, which are tiny eyes, simulating the coloboma defect.
Okay.
They also developed flattened or entirely missing somites, which are the precursor structures to vertebrae.
Missing vertebrae, check.
And they lacked essential embryonic kidney markers. Plus, their entire body axes were severely curved.
So they got the tiny eyes, the missing somites, the absent kidney markers, and curved body axes. Recreating the human phenotype in the zebrafish is a strong indicator, but the rescue experiment is what cements the etiology, right?
Absolutely. The aha moment when the researchers micro-injected healthy wild-type human NR6A1M RNA into the mutant zebrafish, the developmental trajectory is totally normalized.
It fixed them.
It did. The human transcript successfully orchestrated the proper formation of the fish's eyes, somites, and body axis. However, when they injected human mRNA carrying the specific R92W or R436C variants found in the patients.
The exact genetic typos.
Right. When they injected those, the rescue completely failed. The embryos retained the severe developmental defects.
Definitively proving these specific typos caused the disease.
Exactly. It confirms that these precise sequence alterations in NR6A1 are the direct cause of the syndromic presentation.
So what does this all mean? The underlying molecular mechanism has been mapped, demonstrating exactly how the regulatory machinery breaks down. How does this finding alter the clinical landscape for that patient sitting in the exam chair?
It necessitates a fundamental shift in diagnostic protocols. This research establishes a brand new medical classification, oculovertebral renal syndrome, or OVR syndrome.
OVR syndrome?
Yes. Symptoms that were previously charted as just idiopathic anomalies now possess a defined molecular etiology.
Meaning we know the exact cause.
Right. From a practical standpoint, if a pediatric ophthalmologist diagnoses a uveal coloboma in a child's eye, the standard of care must expand.
They need to look elsewhere.
Exactly. They should now actively initiate imaging and screening for occult spinal and renal malformations.
Because catching a silent anomaly, much like that asymptomatic mother who was missing a vertebra, allows for proactive management.
Absolutely.
Identifying a unilateral kidney defect early in childhood simply because an eye exam prompted a broader scan could prevent significant renal complications later in life.
That clinical integration is vital, though we must contextualize the scope of these findings, note the limitations.
Right, it doesn't explain every case.
No, it doesn't. The study indicates that mutations in NR6A1 account for roughly 1.3 to 1.4% of families within these specific coloboma cohorts.
So a small targeted subset.
Yes, indicating significant genetic heterogeneity still exists within coloboma diagnoses. There's still much to learn.
And mining large-scale population sets like the UK100KGP inherently introduces complex secondary findings that require careful interpretation, right?
Definitely. For example, some database patients identified with NR6A1 variants presented with additional clinical features.
Like what?
Including intellectual disability.
Let's see.
Current data is insufficient to determine whether neurological impairment is an atypical manifestation of OVR syndrome extending beyond the primary triad of symptoms.
Or if it just represents a distinct overlapping genetic issue in those specific individuals.
Exactly. Expanding the global cohort of identified cases is critical to fully defining the phenotypic spectrum. Furthermore, the exact downstream genetic targets of NR6A1 still require comprehensive mapping.
We have identified the regulatory general, but we lack the complete roster of the biological troops receiving the orders.
That's a great callback, yes.
Yes.
The paper highlights ongoing investigations into the relationship between NR6A1 and retinoic acid signaling.
Retinoic acid, okay.
Yes. It is a critical signaling molecule that regulates anterior-posterior axis patterning during embryogenesis.
Influencing both ocular and renal development.
Right. Understanding how NR6A1 modulates or intersects with retinoic acid gradients will really clarify the intermediate steps between the initial genetic misfire and the final anatomical defects.
Got it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this research is a profound demonstration of pleiotropy.
Pleiotropy. The concept that a single genetic locus influences multiple, seemingly unrelated phenotypic traits.
Yes. It directly challenges the simplistic notion of isolated developmental pathways. Biological systems are frequently modeled with modular assumptions.
Like a specific gene network for ocular development and an entirely separate network for renal organogenesis.
Right. But NR6A1 illustrates that a single transcription factor can act as a foundational architect for geographically distinct and functionally independent regions of the developing embryo.
To sum this all up for our listeners, the establishment of OVR syndrome proves that the eye, the spine, and the kidneys share a critical early development architect in the NR6A1 gene.
A master switch.
Right. By combining deep clinical evaluations with global genomic databases, researchers can connect seemingly isolated birth defects into a unified genetic diagnosis.
This raises an important question. What does this mean for how we view other isolated congenital defects? Could they actually be the quiet whispers of much larger, undiscovered genetic syndromes waiting for us to connect the dots?
It brings up a fascinating possibility regarding the future of gene editing tools like CRISPR-2. If a single gene acts as an early stage master switch for such diverse anatomical features, utilizing targeted therapies to correct or alter these specific master architects could be incredibly powerful.
Well, that would be really powerful.
But it would also carry the profound risk of unintended off-target developmental consequences across multiple organ systems. You fix the eye, but what happens to the kidney? It's a lot to think about.
It really is.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Change, but we can trace it line by line.
cancer ignite. Family searching through a silent ache. Variations whisper in the choices nature makes. A fold that falters, a compass that bends, a protein misplaced where the message ends. Yet the data hums like a song that mends. In a small bright tank where the new life swims, we knock it down and watch the outline dim. Bring the wild type back, watch the form return. But the variant can't, no matter how we earn. So we learn where the earliest futures burn. Answer ignite.